happen. Did I? Frank stared for a moment and wondered if Cyril had lost the plot. Didn't you see what you did, mate? Cyril placed the suitcase on the floor and shrugged his shoulders. I wasn't going to let those no-good scumbags take what's rightfully ours. Anyway, me mum deserves a pretty dress for that do of hers. Let's forget about them. They probably deserved worse than what we gave them. Me mum said there's a gang of thugs going around the estate, and I bet they're part of it. Cyril threw his head back and laughed. And they ain't a full army now, are they? They're an earshot of a cornfield. Frank didn't get the connection, but laughed anyway. The atmosphere turned serious. I think we've done some crucial damage, Cyril. Do you reckon we'll get our collars felt for it? Cyril looked at the blood on the seam of the suitcase. No one actually saw us, and those cocky bastards won't admit to any defeat. If they call the coppers, then they're as good as grasses and wimps. So nah, I doubt it. Anyway, we're only defending ourselves. What, with a knife, Cyril? It was their knife, Frank, that you managed to take from them, right? Frank frowned. What? No, it was... He stopped when he saw Cyril shaking his head. Oh, I see, yeah. That's right, Cyril. They had the knife first. Now then, let's see what we've got here. And if there's nothing much, I reckon a real leather suitcase will fetch us a tidy few quid down the market. Frank carried the suitcase into his bedroom and closed the door behind Cyril. Go on then, open it. Cyril unzipped the case and allowed it to fall open from the weight equally distributed on both sides. He removed the laundry bag and then unzipped the segregated compartment on the left-hand side. They stood silently, just staring at the contents. Then they both looked at each other in wide-eyed amazement. Well, I'll be buggered with an ironing board. What do you make of that, Frank? Frank was still staring at the grey metal gun, which had been carefully held in a padded compartment. How much do you suppose we get down the market for that thing? Cyril blinked. What? We can't flaming well sell that. Jesus, I'll end up in Ballstall. So, what do you reckon we should do with it then? Cyril shrugged his shoulders. Nothing for now. But I tell you what, it's a lovely tool, he replied, as he took the gun from its compartment and turned it around in his hand. It's heavier than I thought it would be. He then held it up, aiming at the window. Caw, it's a really tasty piece of weaponry. I want to keep it. You never know, I might need it one day. Open the other side of the case, Cyril. See if there's anything we can divide up. When Cyril unzipped the right-hand side, his heart sank. He really hoped it would be loaded with money, but instead, all he saw was a bag of washing powder. Oh, damn it! I thought we'd be in for a few quid. Instead, the mafia man's brought washing powder to wash his smalls, no doubt. Ah, well, I guess I can use it to wash the wine out of that dress. He sighed and looked at his mate, who looked equally deflated. I tell you what, Frank, that suitcase there, I bet it's worth a lot of money. Let's get it checked out. Sorry, I thought it might have diamonds or something valuable in it. Do you mind if I use your sink just to wash out that mark on the dress before I hang it up in me mum's wardrobe? I tell you, Frank, she'll be over the flipping moon. My mum swanning around in a posh frock. What a sight that would be. And look at the shoes. They're proper soft leather. They ain't any old tosh. Yeah, I agree. Right. Go on then. Use the bathroom. Cyril grabbed the dress and the bag of washing powder and made his way to the bathroom. The layout of the flat was exactly the same as his own, except he had to share a room with his brother, so there were two beds in the second bedroom. Just along the hallway on the left was the bathroom. Cyril filled the basin with warm water and poured in a small amount of powder. He scrubbed at the stain, which came out right away. But then he noticed that the washing powder didn't produce any lather or bubbles. A feeling of excitement came over him. Frank! Frank heard the tone in Cyril's voice and ran to the bathroom to find Cyril holding the bag of powder as if he were holding a baby. Frank, this ain't washing powder. I reckon it's drugs. Get out. Really? Cyril nodded. Well, it ain't washing powder. Oh, damn. I just wasted some on the dress.
What do you think we should do with it? Because I don't know much about drugs, Cyril.
Cyril walked back into the bedroom and placed the powder back inside the suitcase.
Me neither, Frank. But for all we know, this could be our lucky break, mate. I don't know how much this is worth on the street, but that's our next mission. We need to find out.
He paused in deep thought.
But we need to be careful, because if we're asking the wrong people, it could come back to bite us on the arse. I know a man who I can trust with me life. I'll have a word with him tomorrow.
Frank rolled his eyes.
You better know what you're doing, Cyril, because the mafia ain't a joke, and neither is getting caught with drugs. I mean, I haven't ever taken drugs in my whole life.
Me neither. And that's the way it's going to stay. I don't want to put anything in me body that shouldn't be there, except for a few beers now and then.
Slowly, Frank opened the front door to check the coast was clear. Then he stuck his neck right out to see if the three hoodlums had crawled away to the rock they'd come from. They had, so he stepped aside and watched Cyril hurry a few doors along and enter his own flat.
Is that you, Cyril?
His mother called out.
Yeah, I'll be with you in a minute.
All right, love. I'm just going to finish me cuppa, then I'm off to bed.
Cyril hurriedly removed the dresses from the suitcase, slid them onto some hangers, and hung them on the outside of his mother's old oak wardrobe. His eyes wandered around her little bedroom, and his heart sank. The rickety bed was covered in a faded bedspread. The light on a nightstand, which was balanced by being shoved against the wall, was also faded, and the pink tassels on the fringes were sparse. There was nothing inviting about his mother's room at all, not compared to the pictures in the magazines. He had to find a way to earn some real money and give her a better life. He placed the leather shoes in front of the wardrobe under the red dress, and then, before he headed to his own bedroom, he stepped back to admire his work. Saying not a word, he slipped out of Mr. Bates's suit, checked it over for any scuff marks or rips, and then, once he was satisfied, he hung it also on a hanger and slipped into his striped pyjama bottoms. Howie didn't move, sleeping like a log. That was until he heard his mother screech,
"What on earth is this?"
Cyril grinned at the excitement in her voice. Howie, though, just sat up straight and rubbed his eyes.
"What's going on, Cyril?"
"Mum's just seen her new party dress."
Howie huffed.
"And where did you nick that from?"
Cyril smiled at his brother and then tapped the side of his nose.
"Cyril! Cyril! Where on earth did you get these from? They're worth a bleeding fortune. They don't look like market dresses to me."
Cyril glided into his mum's bedroom again, laughing.
"That's because they didn't come from the market. They came from the Dorchester Hotel, no less. Some silly posh bird was throwing them out, so I took them out the bin."
Peggy raised her eyebrow.
"Oh, come on, Cyril. That's not true. And knowing you the way I do, I bet there was mischief involved."
Cyril winked.
"Well, they did come from the Dorchester Hotel, and the lady was posh, and she did give them to me. In fact, she almost threw them at me."
Peggy held the red dress up against herself, feeling the richness of the material. Noticing the happiness on his mother's face, Cyril knew he'd done the right thing. She really looked so much prettier and classier than the woman from the hotel.
"Oh, Cyril, the shoes fit like a glove. Oh, my God, they feel like socks on me feet. I shall only ever wear these for best. So what else did you manage to get?"
"Nothing, really. I only got you a few bits of clobber. So now you can go to the ball."
"My, my, Cyril, I will be the belle of the ball and all. Dressed in red, heads will turn, lad, heads will turn."
"Good. And so they should. Right, I'm off to bed. I need me beauty sleep."
Pleased with himself for being the one to put a smile on his mother's face, Cyril slept like a baby. He gave no further thought to the fight, the gun, and the drugs. Chapter 9. By 6 a.m., Cyril was up. Peggy was beginning to stir, but still in her bed, and Howie was sound asleep. Cyril wanted to get out while the darkness afforded some decent cover. He'd already decided to leave the suitcase, with the gun and the drugs inside, under his bed, and instead go and pay Mr. Bates a visit, if he was in, which couldn't be guaranteed, even at this early hour. Since Mr. Bates had recovered from the lung condition that he thought would kill him, he'd become a very busy man. Nevertheless, he always had time for Peggy. Every so often, he would bring along a big bag of meat, and last Christmas, like Scrooge himself, he'd brought the biggest turkey, and along with it came a fridge he'd bought, much to the delight of his mother, who had made sure that no matter how many times a sticky hand touched the large long silver handle, she would make it her mission in life to polish it clean, to the point that she would then stand back and admire her addition to the kitchen. Daybreak cast light on the entrance to the lift. For a second, Cyril stopped and just gazed at the bloodstains. For what he'd classed as a tussle had turned out to be more than that. He tried to recall what he had done to the guy on the floor, but he couldn't remember. The disturbing memory was of Frank cutting Nut-Nut's ear off. He shuddered, but turned and peered over the balcony, although he couldn't see anything on the floor below. Once the lift door opened, he sidled in and looked carefully at the floor. Like the outside, the inside was also covered in claret. "Oh, shit," he mumbled under his breath. Perhaps they'd gone overboard with the belting. But then he remembered that he and Frank had been confronted with three thugs intent on stealing his suitcase. He smiled proudly and huffed. They deserved every clump they got. Three long taps, followed by two slow taps, was the code for Mr. Bates. He waited, wondering if Mr. Bates was even up at this hour. When the door opened, Mr. Bates ushered Cyril inside before quickly closing the door.
"Right, go into the living room. You're lucky I even answered the door again."
"Again? Mr. Bates, what's going on?"
"What's going on?"
He raised his voice.
"I can only bloody guess what's been going on, but I was the one who got questioned over it. So, Cyril, do you want to tell me what you're up to yesterday?"
Cyril sat down in the armchair that was positioned against the long window while Mr. Bates sat opposite. Cyril wondered why on earth the police would question Mr. Bates over some stolen property from the Dorchester Hotel, which was two bus rides away. He screwed his face up, determined not to give anything away.
"What did they say, Mr. Bates?"
"They asked me if I had anything to do with three lads who'd been beaten half to death, one having had his ear sliced off."
Cyril deflated his chest.
"Oh, that,"
he stupidly replied, along with a relieved sigh.
"Oh, that. Oh, that. So tell me, lad, what were you up to if beating three young men up comes down to just saying, 'Oh, that,' as if 'oh' was nothing?"
Cyril felt his cheeks redden. He hadn't thought it through before he'd opened his mouth, and he could have kicked himself. He didn't want to lie to Mr. Bates, as he'd come to see him to discuss business, which in fact was to do with what he'd been up to yesterday.
"Well, actually, Mr. Bates, that's why I'm here, really."
Mr. Bates sensed that there was something more serious to discuss.
"Go on, lad."
"Do you know anyone who buys drugs?"
He couldn't think of any other way to ask, other than coming straight out with it. Mr. Bates's sleek features for a moment looked almost vampire-like. He could just have easily played the part of Dracula. Cyril swallowed hard as Mr. Bates, with his lips now pursed, stared at him, his eyes almost boring into his soul. Cyril hadn't seen this expression before, and he didn't like it either.
"Why?"
Never mind. Sorry, I shouldn't have asked. Anyway, I managed to get Mum a nice dress, and I'll have your suit dry cleaned and back to you before next week."
The words almost tripped over themselves as Cyril shot up out of the armchair ready to leave.
"Sit, boy,"
demanded Mr. Bates, as he got up and placed a hand on Cyril's shoulder, pushing him back into the armchair.
"Don't rush off. I asked you a question and I want an answer. Now then, let's start again. Why do you want to know if I know anyone who buys drugs? Because, Cyril, that isn't like asking me what football team I support now, is it?"
"Okay, okay. I know you and me grandpop were villains, and I know that you still do what you do, and it ain't none of me business. I trust you, Mr. Bates. So here's the thing. Me and Frank came across a bag of powder, and, well, it definitely ain't washing powder, so we think it's a bag of drugs, perhaps cocaine or heroin."
"What colour is it?"
asked Mr. Bates, in an even tone.
It's white.
It's more than likely cocaine. And how much does it weigh?
Cyril leaned forward. Mr. Bates had him interested now.
Dunno. Might be half a pound.
Are you fucking serious?
Cyril nodded.
Yeah, of course. The truth is, I nicked it by mistake. I just needed a suitcase to carry the dress I acquired for me mum. Anyway, when we got back from the hotel, we unzipped the case to find a bag of white powder.
He deliberately left out the fact that he'd also found a gun in there as well.
Did anyone, and I mean anyone at all, clock you leaving the hotel with the suitcase?
Cyril shook his head.
No, and I reckon by the time the Italian noticed it was missing, we were probably on the bus home.
Italian?
I don't know. He was dark-skinned, that was for sure. He could have been Spanish, Italian, or an Arab, although he didn't have a tea towel on his head.
Bloody hell, boy. You could have the mafia on your arse. Right. What do you want to do, Cyril? Cause, son, getting involved in selling drugs is a very, very dangerous and risky game. You're just 15 years old. I know you get up to no good, but we probably all did at your age. But jumping from the odd little tickle to peddling drugs is a serious prison sentence, and...
He paused and got up.
Do you want to be a crook, Cyril? Or get a decent job and earn an honest living, not looking over your shoulder all the time?
Come on, Mr. Bates. Even if I got a good education, I couldn't even afford the suit for an interview. I don't speak the Queen's English, and I don't know what I want to do to earn a living. But I do know I want to live in a big house, drive a flash motor, and have money in me back pocket for a few beers.
It's all or nothing, Cyril. It's like rolling the dice. Because if you go down that road of villainy, you either make it big or you end up in the clink, wondering why the fuck you didn't just get a 9-to-5 job and stay out of trouble.
Cyril looked around the room and noticed the paintings on the wall, the new sofa, two high-quality armchairs, and the new coffee table. Mr. Bates even had a fancy unit that housed his bottles of spirits. The most luxurious additions were the floor covering. There was no lino or rug here, but wall-to-wall carpet, and the floor-to-ceiling curtains. It was a pivotal moment for him. If he wanted what Mr. Bates had, all the luxury items, the nice trappings of success, then there was no point in working in a factory and bringing home the same pitiful monthly salary.
You do all right, though, Mr. Bates, don't you? I mean, look at this place. You've got it rigged out all fancy.
Mr. Bates sighed.
But, Cyril, look at me.
He raised his hand to demonstrate the finery in the room.
All this, and me sitting in a chair alone, with no wife, no kids, and fuck all of any importance. So why is this not enough?
Cyril frowned.
Cos, lad, I was in and out of the nick. Me lovely Lady Annie, such a sweet woman, stayed with me until I got an 8 stretch, and then she buggered off with me pal. I didn't blame her at the time, although I wanted to kill him, but the truth is, it was me own fault. I got greedy. I didn't know when to call it a day. And now I collect monies owed to me and can afford luxuries, but, here's the point, I have no one to share it with.
Cyril tilted his head.
Money's owing to you?
Yes, Cyril. In the early days, I'd a lot of money and used to lend it. But don't get me wrong, I let them pay it back when they could. Some took the piss. They had a word of warning, Mr. Bates style. But some genuinely didn't have the money at the time. So years on, when they're back on their feet and are able to pay me what they owe, I treat myself to something nice. It don't make up for the loneliness, though.
Cyril drank in everything that Mr. Bates was saying. For a moment, he felt sorry for the man. He then said something that he didn't even realise what he'd said until the words came out of his mouth.
You may not have kids, but you've been like a dad to me.
Mr. Bates' eyes suddenly widened.
I never wanted kids.
Sorry, I only meant that you've been there for me. Perhaps saying you've been like a dad was going too far.
Mr. Bates laughed.
I don't know, Cyril. You really can talk your way out of trouble, can't you? Right, anyway, back to this drug stash you have. First, tell absolutely no one.
Frank knows.
Mr. Bates nodded.
Well, he's a lad of just a few words, that one.
You're right, he won't say a dicky bird.
Second, that is a lot of cocaine, if that's what it is. And it's worth a lot of money.
Cyril's eyes shot open.
How much?
Mr. Bates waved his hands.
Look,
Forget that for now. The thing is, you don't know who you've nicked it from, so you need to stash it away somewhere safe and wait. Someone out there is going to be pretty pissed off, and word will get about soon enough. So we need to know who owned the drugs in the first place. If you suddenly start peddling cocaine in large amounts, the Italians, or whoever, will come for you. And with that amount of cocaine in a suitcase, it's sure to mean they'll have a right hefty mob behind them, and you, son, will end up in a suitcase yourself at the bottom of the frigging Thames.
Cyril felt a chill run through him at the thought, and wondered if it was excitement or nerves.
Okay, Mr. Bates, but do you know roughly how much it's all worth?
Mr. Bates rolled his eyes.
Now, lad, don't you go getting carried away, right? I don't want you to go making yourself busy trying to sell that shit, because mark my words, the Italians or the Arabs or whoever will know. They only have to get a clue that someone's selling this shit, and then they'll find you and kill you. These drug peddlers don't mess about. They're serious gangsters, ruthless, in fact.
I ain't silly, Mr. Bates. I won't go flogging it. But I don't know enough about it. I have some serious homework to do. So how much do you reckon?
Rubbing his bristly chin, Mr. Bates then peered into space.
£100, perhaps. It could even be more. It depends how hard it is to get hold of at the moment and who's willing to buy it if it's top quality.
Cyril was breathless.
£100? Bloody hell.
Cyril, listen. Say nothing and fucking do nothing, right?
Cyril sat up straight. Mr. Bates's tone was not to be taken lightly, and besides, he never usually swore.
Okay, Mr. Bates, I promise. Shall I just hide it and wait a few days?
A few days? No, you daft sod. We need to wait a few months. Christ, if you're serious about this, Cyril, you'd better learn bleeding well fast and do as you're told, right?
Cyril stared him straight in the face and nodded.
And don't get anything on loan, because that also draws attention. You just go about your business as if nothing's changed, and don't even think about the money. I need to do a bit of digging.
He sighed.
First, I better try to find out who the blazes you've gone and nicked it from.
Cyril watched as Mr. Bates relaxed into his armchair, and then he saw a generous smile creep its way across the man's face.
So, he sniggered, you gave that little gang what for, did you?
Who were they?
Nigel Deacon, for one. The right little bastard he is. I knew his father and all. Funny, because I had a toe-to-toe with him many years ago. Such a horrible tribe, that lot. Well, anyway, watch out, because I don't think that hiding will necessarily make them think twice about giving you any more grief. Or Frank, for that matter. The police questioned me about it because, like I said, any trouble they always knock at my door. What a joke, eh? Do I look like a teenager? Mind you, the police were probably just doing a routine check. I don't think they'll be feeling your collar. Word has it that those lads have been robbing a few of the flats, and they've even stooped to robbing the old people on the estate.
That pricked Cyril's ears.
No way. So do you think it was them?
Mr. Bates nodded.
Yeah, they're cocky bastards, they are. But Cyril, be careful, because I do believe they have a firm. And Nigel has a cousin called Red, or Rhett, from Hackney, who, by all accounts, is a nutcase.
Well, I ain't worrying over anything that ain't happened yet. I best get off home and hide that powder somewhere safe.
Mr. Bates got up and placed a hand on Cyril's shoulder.
Crime is always only a short win, Cyril. You're a bright lad, and you can make something of yourself by doing it the right way.
I would love to go to university and become a lawyer or an accountant or something like that, but let's face it, I ain't the type that would fit in, and I don't have the money to pay for it. But you watch me, Mr. Bates. I will be rich one day.
Mr. Bates squeezed Cyril's shoulder.
You are your grandfather, all right.
Let's hope I'm a bit smarter than he was, because he ended up skint, didn't he?
Mr. Bates's face suddenly fell in a sea of sadness.
Yeah. I'm afraid he did.
Chapter 10. Cyril waited until his mother left the flat to go to a new job at the chocolate factory. He just watched her spray lacquer over her hair, which was piled high, and then run a quick slither of lipstick over her lips. He smiled to himself. She was happy.
Not that they had much, but life was better living in the flat rather than the house, although that was now razed to the ground. She'd returned to the odd game of poker and was grateful to be escorted by Mr. Bates once a month uptown. She won more games than she lost, and the cash was enough to cover the rent and buy a few treats, including the pretty flowered dresses, which brightened up her face, her pink patent handbag and matching shoes. She made sure that all the wardrobes contained decent clothes. The family had nothing expensive, but gone were the days of wearing holey jumpers and cardboard in their boots. She would roll her eyes and then smile when he'd place a few shillings on the table, and she was past caring where he'd got them from. He didn't like to lie, and yet he didn't want her worrying. He'd learned a few things about his grandfather, and so when his mother ruffled his hair and said, "Oh, Cyril, you are so much like me, Dad. He would have been proud of you." He knew that she was wise to the world of crooks. Perhaps she had seen so much in her hard life that she wasn't so averse to falling off that straight path trodden by the law-abiding citizen. As soon as she was out of the door, Cyril retrieved the suitcase from under his bed, wrapped the gun and the drugs inside an old shirt, and got to work removing the wooden panel that lined the bottom of the wardrobe. He almost bent the kitchen knife trying to prise it out, but as soon as the nail loosened, he removed the panel and then placed the gun and drugs inside before carefully putting the panel back. He got up and sat on the end of his bed and thought about his future. Mr. Bates had a point. He either became a villain or he found a half-decent job, thereby never having to risk spending time inside a prison cell. His mind went over and over the pros and cons. He had to ask himself if he would ever be satisfied with clocking into work for the 8 hours a day and then returning to sit in a flat, with the only excitement being a few beers on a Friday or Saturday night. The thought of £100 for that bag of white powder weaved its way through his brain, like a whisper beckoning him to take the risk. £100 would be the equivalent to a year's wages from the local factories, meaning he wouldn't even have to punch a card into the clocking station and spend 8 hours a day doing something he hated. He wanted to own a business, own a house, and drive a flash motor. He wanted the handmade suits, the Italian leather shoes, and to smell of expensive aftershave. Mr. Bates always smelled good, always wore classy clothes. It gave him a bit of an edge, and he wanted to be like that too. A commotion from the bottom of the flats snapped Cyril from his thoughts. He jumped up and peered out of the window to see a car being unloaded and a woman bellowing at the driver.
"You'll regret the day you ever crossed me. Go on then, fuck off back to your wife. You were never any good to me anyway."
Cyril chuckled to himself as he watched the suited and booted man drag suitcases and boxes from the back seat of the car, while a well-dressed woman kept screaming in his ear hole,
"Mind me fucking hatbox, you clumsy bastard."
"Oh, for God's sake, Sonia, will you stop screeching? You'll burst me eardrum. I am not going back to me wife. I want to be on me own. I never bloody asked you to move in anyway, so stop screaming at me."
Cyril continued to watch the commotion, and then he noticed a very young woman with striking red hair that shone like chestnuts in the sun. She was dainty and dressed in a black and white polka dot dress and black patent shoes. Her long hair was tied up in a black bow, and she stood with her arms folded, just staring as if this fracas was a usual event. Suddenly, the woman stopped screaming and grabbed the young girl by her arm.
"Come on, Flossie, fuck him. Help me carry the bags back to the flat."
"Mum, get off me. I know the bloody way."
"Well, don't just stand there like a peacock. Grab a bag and help, will ya?"
Cyril noticed the girl's face as she turned towards the flats. His stomach felt odd, and his heart beat faster. She was probably the same age as him, and her face, although stern, was almost cat-like, with almond eyes and rosebud lips. Her cheekbones were high and chiselled, and the way she walked was so controlled and serene, to him she looked like one of those models in the magazines.
"Flossie, get a bloody move on before someone pinches all our belongings."
Cyril spotted that when they were out of sight, there were quite a number of bags left behind. He hurried from the bedroom, quickly straightened his hair in the mirror, ran along the walkway to the stairwell and jumped the stairs two at a time to stand guard over the boxes and bags until he saw Flossie, as he now knew she was called, and her mother return for them.
Before they could say a word, he said,
"Would you two ladies like a hand carrying your bags up?"
Flossie's mother looked questioningly at Cyril and screwed up her face.
"Why would you want to help us? Got your eye on me daughter, have you now?"
Gobsmacked, Cyril bit back.
"No, I was just being a gentleman, that's all. But if you don't need me help, then carry on, missus."
Flossie's face lit up and she giggled.
"That told you, mother. Shut your mouth and get your arms full, girl."
Flossie looked at Cyril and rolled her eyes. It was at that precise moment that Cyril felt he'd been stabbed in the heart by Cupid's arrow.
"I'm Cyril Reardon. Pleased to meet you."
"Flossie Heaver. Likewise."
Cyril picked up a heavy-looking box and walked towards the lifts with Flossie holding a hat box.
"So are you moving in then, Flossie?"
She shook her head.
"We never really moved out. We only stayed at me mum's fella's for a few weeks until he got pissed off with her."
"What was that, Floss?"
yelled her mother, who was now impatiently smacking the lift button.
"Nothing, mum,"
she sighed. After three more trips, every bag and box was inside their flat on the fourth floor. Flossie's mum thanked him and ushered him out of the flat at breakneck speed. In fact, she was so quick that when he turned around to say goodbye, he found the door was slammed in his face. Still, that didn't bother him, because he and Flossie had shared a few looks. One was a laugh behind her mother's back, and then there were a couple of shy glances. With his mind on the new girl, Flossie, he didn't see Frank until he almost bumped into him.
"Hey, mate, where have you been?"
Frank had his hands in his trouser pockets and wore a face like a smacked arse.
"To the asylum. Me mum's sick."
Cyril had never seen Frank look so sad.
"Oh, sorry, mate. Is she bad?"
Frank nodded.
"Yeah. She won't last the week, they reckon."
"Oh, no. Do you fancy having a wander around the market to take your mind off it?"
Frank gave a lipless smile.
"I'm not really in the mood, Cyril."
"Do you want to be on your own?"
Frank shook his head.
"Not really. Do you fancy coming to mine, though? Because I don't really want to face anyone, and my old man's at Shirley's."
They headed along the walkway to Frank's flat and went inside straight into the kitchen where they both sat at the table.
"You never speak about your mum, Frank."
"Nah, I guess it's a sore subject. Me mum has problems. Her brain ain't right, you know. She gets these violent tempers that the doctors reckon ain't normal. It's something in her blood, I don't know. Me dad had to put her in the asylum. At first he hoped she could get treated, but as the time went by, the doctors told him she'll probably never get better."
"Cor, that must be hard, eh, Frank? I would miss my mum badly. I suppose you do, eh?"
Frank slowly shook his head.
"Nah, not at all. Because all my memories of me mum ain't good ones. She tried to kill me a few times. Luckily, me dad caught her. I remember this one time I was in the tin bath, and then she had her hands around me throat and me head was underwater. I couldn't breathe. I fought and fought, but she was so much stronger than me. It was bleeding frightening."
He paused and looked up to find Cyril with his mouth open.
"Blimey," said Cyril.
"I was under the water with me eyes open, and then I saw me dad, and instantly I was out of the water gasping for breath. All me dad would scream was, 'Why? Why? Why?' I don't know. None of us knew why she wanted to kill me."
Cyril watched as Frank stood up from the chair. He turned to the side and rolled down the top of his trousers to reveal his right buttock. Cyril gasped at the swirls of scarred skin.
"Jesus!"
"She sat me in the fire, and it was me Aunt Shirley that saved me that time. That's when she and me dad called the authorities. It broke me dad, you know. He got a bit nasty with everyone. He's all right now, mind you, and me Aunt Shirley's always been good to me."
He pulled his trousers back up and sat down.
"So if your mum did all that to you, why did you want to visit her?"
"She's dying.
I guess you wanted to say goodbye, you know, just in case, like..."
Frank looked across to Cyril and screwed his nose up.
"No. I wanted to hear her say she was sorry before she pegged it, but she just looked me up and down and said, 'What the hell do you want?'
I shrugged my shoulders and stared at her thin, gaunt face and wondered if behind those dark eyes lurked the devil. I just couldn't stop staring at her. Then she grinned, and she had hardly any teeth. But it was that sick look, as if she was laughing at me. It was as if she hated me. So I just turned around and left, and I won't be going back. Cyril felt the lump in his throat when he saw his mate's shoulders droop in utter sadness. Well, Frank, you tried, mate. You can take a horse to water, but you can't make it drink. Frank shook his head. I don't know what you mean, but you're probably right. That evening, Peggy dished up a large tray of shepherd's pie and invited Frank to dinner. It was not that he needed an invitation. He usually got fed if Peggy was laying the table.
Open that drawer there, Howie, she said, pointing to the freestanding cabinet that was always empty.
Gaw, what's all this, Mum?
Those are what the factory manager calls seconds. He said I could help myself.
Howie placed the large box of chocolates on the table, removed the lid and eyed each and every one of them.
It's like Christmas.
Peggy smacked his hand away. Now then, no touching until you've washed your hands and eaten your dinner. She looked at Frank.
How are you, babe? Your dad told me what's going on. If you want to talk, I'm all ears, love.
Frank gazed at Peggy for a while. I didn't even know her, really. I know you more than her. For a moment, Peggy felt so sorry for Frank. Shirley Mills and Henry Marsden had filled her in on the truth behind his mother being in an asylum. How she'd repeatedly abused Frank and tried to kill him. And she knew that was the reason why Henry kept a watchful eye on Frank, because he didn't want him to get out of hand and go off the rails. She also understood Frank's father was just grateful that it hadn't affected Frank mentally, and on the outside he did seem a well-adjusted lad. Peggy used her wide knife to score the crispy top of the shepherd's pie and then used an egg slice to lift a generous helping onto each plate. She drained the spring greens and placed some on the side, adding a knob of butter before pouring gravy over the top. As soon as she placed it under Frank's nose, his face lit up.
Caw, my favourite.
I know, lad. I'm sure you can smell it right down the walkway, because you always turn up just when I'm about to serve.
She ruffled his hair. The small table in the kitchen could just about seat the four of them, now the lads were getting bigger. Howie was taller than Cyril and plumper, but he still had a very young face and dimples. Cyril was still slim, but he wore a man's expression. His grey eyes sparkled, especially when he was being cheeky. Peggy wondered if that's how he always seemed to get out of trouble, because she knew damn well he was often in it. However, her Cyril was never not going to be up to something or other. It was in his bones, in his blood, and it had been passed straight down from her father, no doubt. As soon as they'd finished and used the last of the bread to wipe the plates clean, Howie opened the box of chocolates, but Peggy tapped his fingers again. You can take the rubbish down for me first, and then we can all have a chocolate. She turned to Cyril. Opportunity Knocks is on soon. There are four beers in the fridge and some Battenberg cake. Frank beamed again because he loved watching the TV. He didn't have one at home, and Peggy had only recently acquired one, so it was a novelty. Just as they were seated with a beer in their hands and the TV was warming up, they heard a high-pitched scream, like that of an injured fox. Peggy's heart was in her mouth. She jumped up from her chair and flew to the lounge floor-to-ceiling window. Throwing it open, she leaned over the balcony looking for Howie. She knew that sound. It was odd and piercing, and it was from her son. She'd only ever heard it twice before, once when a rat had bitten him when he was 2 years old, and the other time was when he trod on a nail that went straight through his shoe and up through the sole of his foot. She panicked, trying to see where he was, but she could only see the shadows of three, possibly four men. The bins tucked under the balcony of the first floor restricted the view to the lift and stairs. In a panic, she grabbed her shoes and pelted along the hallway.
It's Howie, that noise, it's him, she cried. And I can see the outlines of men down there. Quick, Cyril!
What?
Screeched Cyril, as he and Frank leapt from their chairs and hurried behind Peggy. Cyril was still holding his unopened bottle. The thought of anyone hurting his brother sent him into that place where the world changes.
Feeling every inch of his body alight, he suddenly pushed past his mother and ran to the stairwell, jumping down the stairs four at a time. So much was rushing through his head at the thought of his little brother hurt or being beaten. "Christ!" he mumbled under his breath. Had those men who he and Frank had bashed the life out of come back out for revenge? Maybe, he thought. Mr. Bates was right, and they'd come here firm-handed. Mr. Bates had warned him, but he couldn't think about that now. He needed to get to his brother. As soon as he leapt from the last few steps, he saw them. The fact that there were six men didn't bother him one bit. He looked down at the tarmac to see how he curled in a ball, his cheeks swelling like a balloon and his whole body shaking. Cyril had seen enough to tell him that his little brother was traumatised, and it sent him into a rage like never before. Every nerve was alight, every muscle throbbed, and his pulse beat like a war drum. His brother was sweet and kind, and he wouldn't hurt a fly. He did no wrong, and he couldn't fight his way out of a paper bag. He wouldn't even have known what was going on. Cyril ground his teeth and flared his nostrils. He gripped the bottle and glared, looking to see who was in charge. The biggest, ugliest man, with black teeth and white eyelashes to match his light ginger hair, smirked. He stared at Cyril and bared his teeth while he kicked Howie in the stomach. A daring glare with a curled lip would have worried anyone, because this was Red Deacon, a cousin to Nigel Deacon, a woman-beating, obnoxious, nasty piece of work who terrorised the streets of southeast London. He'd got away with it for years, and at 23 he was a first-class bully who took what he wanted and from those he wanted to. He wore a smart suit, but no amount of smartness would change the fact that he had a face that only his mother could love and teeth that would give a great white shark a run for its money.
"So, you must be Cyril Reardon, then, who fucking hurt me cousin. You shouldn't have done that."
There was no time for talk. Cyril felt the anger surge through him like the red-hot lava from an erupting volcano. In one fluid movement, he launched himself at the ginger-haired man. He guessed it was Red Deacon. He lowered his head like a bull and rammed him in the chest. Then, as the man staggered back, trying not to lose his balance, Cyril pulled his arm back and with all his strength, he hit the guy around the head with his unopened bottle. Even though the thump was loud, Cyril didn't notice Deacon's eyes roll back. All Cyril could do was lash out. Again and again, he smashed the bottle around the man's head as though he was tenderising a cheap piece of meat.
"I'll fucking kill ya!" he yelled.
He couldn't hear the commotion behind him. All he wanted to do was to kill the ginger-haired bastard, and he wouldn't stop until he had. On the point of hitting Deacon again, he missed because the bloke had sunk to his knees just after the bottle had finally smashed into millions of pieces. It was time to take stock of what had happened. Reality had at last smacked him in the face. When his eyes began to focus, he saw the blood dripping from his hands and the broken bottle. But something warm and sticky trickled down his face. He heard his mother yell. As he turned around, he gasped when he witnessed his sweet, inoffensive mum pounding another man in the head with the heel of her shoe. It was like hammering a nail into a piece of wood.
"Take that, you fucking scumbag! And that!"
she yelled as she smashed him again. Then he saw Frank fighting two men. He was more controlled, with his arms in a real boxer's stance, and each jab or right hook was precise. The two men were being punched, left, right and centre. They didn't stand a chance. One copped a nasty blow and toppled over. The second man ran like a chicken. Then Cyril saw the knife in Frank's hand and watched the remaining lad finally leg it away. In all the fracas, it was Mr. Bates who shocked him the most. He was wielding a bat and using it to beat the other men about the head as if he was whacking a rounder's ball. He seemed to fight with little effort, as if it was child's play. All around him was carnage. He had to grab his mother before she got hurt, and as he tried to pull her away, he saw something in her eyes he'd never seen before. It was a rage that would terrify anyone who crossed her. The guy was trying to get away from her. Blood poured from his head, his nose and his ear. She had well and truly battered him, but she was still gripping him with one hand while trying to smash him with her shoe to injure him some more.
"No one hurts my boys! No one!" she screamed.
Out of the six members of Deacon's gang who had started the fight, only Red was left on the tarmac, now groaning but trying to get to his feet. Mr. Bates grabbed Cyril and Peggy.
"Get Howie upstairs quickly and wash the blood off that shoe, and you, Cyril, get cleaned up."
Frank was out of breath, but he managed to scoop Howie up like a forklift truck and take him to the lift to their third floor. Peggy was running alongside him, looking at Howie's beaten face.
It's going to be all right, son, I promise.
Cyril stared at the state of Deacon.
Fuck.
About to head back to his flat, now things were under control, Mr. Bates pulled Cyril aside.
I said a while ago that Deacon's cousin will want to throw his weight around. Well, let's hope that's the end of it. Now go and get cleaned up before the police show themselves.
Cyril took one last look at Deacon's bloody head. Then he ran up the stairs and hurried along the walkway and into the flat, slamming the front door behind him. Peggy and Frank laid Howie on his bed.
Cyril, get a bowl of water, will you, love? I want to see what those bastards did to him. Christ, if he's badly hurt, I will swing that fucking fishwife Sheila Deacon off her tower block. Fancy raising bloody evil bullies like that. I swear she will come a cropper. I've never liked her anyway.
Frank helped undress Howie. He looked so frightened. His eyes were wide and his permanent grin was gone. As Frank tried to pull the shirt over Howie's head, the younger lad winced. It was too painful for him to straighten up. But Peggy helped, and between them, they had Howie's top off. Peggy stepped back with her hands to her mouth. Howie's chest was purple, and there was even a boot print on his ribs. Tears tumbled down her face.
Oh, my little lad. It's going to be all right. You're safe now. And I promise you, no one will hurt you ever again.
Cyril returned with a bowl of warm water and a flannel. He swallowed hard as he wiped his brother's swollen face. His left eye was completely closed.
I'm sorry, Howie. I never knew those men would come looking for me. You didn't deserve this.
Peggy pulled him away.
Get up to Mr. Bates and see if he's got any painkillers, strong ones.
Cyril nodded and did as he was told, while Frank stayed and helped Peggy get Howie into his pyjamas. She knew how to check for internal injuries, but even so, the bruises were horrific, and she wished she'd seen them before she'd beaten one of the men with her shoe. She would have made sure she killed him. Looking at Frank's hands and then his shirt and trousers, she said,
"You get in the bathroom and wash your hands. Check there's no blood on your shirt, or I'll have to shred it and flush it down the loo."
"We didn't murder anyone, Mrs. Reardon.
Listen, son, do you know the definition of murder?"
Frank shrugged his shoulders.
"You are responsible for someone's death?"
Peggy shook her head.
"Well, that's partly correct. But if you hurt someone badly enough and they die from the injuries within a year and a day, it's still classed as murder. And the way Cyril has bashed that Deacon bastard, he could die next week from internal head injuries. Just because he was alive when we left him don't mean he won't die, and the filth will have us up as accomplices."
Frank said no more and hurried to the bathroom and scrubbed his hands. On the wall opposite the toilet, next to the bath, was a long mirror. He carefully studied every inch of his clothes, and lucky for him, there was no blood. He returned to the bedroom to find Peggy kneeling beside Howie's bed and stroking his head. Frank felt sick. Poor Howie's face was a mess. It was so swollen, he looked like a purple pumpkin. And if he hadn't cut Nut-Nut's ear off, then those men wouldn't have sought revenge, and poor Howie wouldn't have been caught in the middle. Guilt was a horrible feeling. It was one that he had never felt before, and never wanted to again. Frank could hear Cyril running back along the walkway and then the sound of the front door being slammed shut. Holding a bottle of liquid, Cyril said,
"Mr. Bates gave me this. He said only to give Howie a teaspoonful or he'll be asleep for a whole week."
Peggy took the bottle and removed the lid. Carefully, she placed it to Howie's lips.
"Try to sip a little. You'll feel so much better, my angel."
Howie sipped the liquid before he curled into a tighter ball. Peggy placed the blue candlewick bedspread over him and gently kissed his forehead before ushering Frank and Cyril into the living room.
"Cyril, get those clothes off. And Frank, fetch me the scissors. They're in the drawer by my bed. Cyril, get cleaned up and put a clean shirt and a fresh pair of trousers on. If the police come calling, you've been in here all night. Where's your pack of cards? Get them on the table. We'll say we've been playing cards."
Cyril and Frank didn't argue. Cyril went to his bedroom, quickly got changed, and returned to the living room, while Frank fetched the scissors from Peggy's bedroom.
"Good. Cut up Cyril's clothes as small as you can. I don't want to clog up the lav, but we need to get rid of that shirt.
And for Christ's sake, Cyril, wash your hair, will you? There's blood all over you.
Cyril ran his hands through his hair and felt the sickly liquid.
Well, it ain't mine. No, it's probably full of that ginger-haired bastard's blood and brains. Now get a move on. And while you're at it, wash me shoes. I can't flush them away.
If the police call, what do we do about Howie?
You leave all the talking to me, do you hear? This is just a precaution, because hopefully that nightmare of a family will keep their mouth shut. Nothing worse than getting a name as a grass, is there? And I will pay their mother a visit soon to remind her of the fact, and also to give her a bloody piece of my mind. Who the hell do they think they are, bashing a kid, and a defenceless kid when all's said and done?
Cyril could hear the anger in her voice as her pitch got higher.
I have a good mind to go there right now and punch the life out of her. See how she likes it. God help me, I should have caved her spiteful face in years ago.
Cyril looked at Frank, who in turn shrugged his shoulders. After flushing the strips of his shirt down the toilet, Cyril scrubbed his mother's shoes and headed for the kitchen to find her wearing her nightdress and a bright pink quilted dressing gown.
How do you know that family anyway, Mum?
Peggy's face was tight, and her movements were quick with temper. She put the kettle on and lit up a cigarette, taking a deep drag.
The old tart went after your father when I was expecting you. I warned her to stay away, but she laughed in me face and said, I can give your old man what you can't.
She took another deep drag.
If I hadn't been heavily pregnant with you, I would have swung for her and your father, the bleeding good-for-nothing sod.
How did you know I'd had a run-in with this Deacon family?
Peggy sighed.
I ain't blind nor deaf. Besides, Mr. Bates told me.
She held up her hands.
Not that he was grassing on you two. No, he warned me in case there were any repercussions. Well, it looks like they're bleeding were.
She shook her head, exhausted.
He's only 14. How dare they?
I don't think they'll ever touch Howie again. Not after the fight they've just had.
And I bet they didn't expect you to join in, Mrs. Reardon, said Frank,
through a held-in snigger. Cyril sensed the tension leaving and laughed out loud.
Oh, yeah. You don't need a hammer, do you, Mum?
Peggy blushed and then laughed herself.
And what about you, Cyril? You were tore as the ball out there. I didn't even see your arms move as you smashed the great oaf with a bottle.
Mrs. Reardon, you won't say nothing to me dad, will you?
Peggy stubbed a cigarette out and gave Frank a look of confusion.
What do you mean? That you helped defend Cyril, my Howie, and yourself against six grown men? I'd like to think he'd be proud. A chip off the old block, wouldn't you say?
Frank sighed. I don't know about that. He don't like me getting into bother.
Well, your father could fight when he was younger, and he often did. By all accounts, he was a proper good bare-knuckle fighter as well. You must take after him. Anyway, I won't mention any of this, babe. Let's just pray the police won't call.
Cyril lay in bed in deep thought. The evening had opened his eyes. He had seen his mother in a new light. Maybe she had been like it all along, but he had only ever seen her as his sweet, kind-hearted mum. That expression in her eyes when he tried to pull her off the guy she was beating with her shoe would stay with him. He saw it when he closed his eyes, how quick she was to ensure that any evidence was stripped and flushed, as if this wasn't new to her at all. He cast his mind back to when the landlord was murdered, and she had the £3 on her person, but he'd heard her tell Mr. Bates that her attacker had stolen it, and she'd been so controlled when the police had called that day. Maybe Mr. Bates had given her £3, or maybe he hadn't. Either way, it was possible that perhaps his mother had a side to her that she'd never wanted him to see. A smile slid across his face, when, as clear as day, all the little snippets of the past suddenly made sense. His mother could play the innocent housewife, the single mother of two, who was always trying her best to bring up her two lads on the penny she had. Yet behind that inoffensive, bright smile, there was a woman who had seen more than most. Perhaps she'd witnessed far more of her father's villainy than she'd ever let on. Cyril could only assume that his mother was clever to his own naughty little ways, but instead of coming down hard on him, she either turned a blind eye or just watched from afar.
Chapter 11. It was a month after the fight, and no one had come near or by. Word had spread, since everyone on the estate loved to gossip, and it also changed the way they treated Cyril and Frank. The teenagers, and even the young men in their early 20s, went out of their way to say hello or how's it going. It was as if for the first time they'd suddenly become visible. Eager to get the cocaine sold and have that money in his back pocket, Cyril was up with the lark, dressed and ready to pay Mr. Bates a visit. As he walked along the walkway, he could hear a car revving up and then stalling. He looked across to see Mr. Marsden's car parked awkwardly, and then, as he looked more closely, he saw Frank in the driver's seat. He smiled to himself. Frank was having a driving lesson, if he ever managed to get the old banger into first gear. He thought about the money he could earn from the powder. Frank wouldn't have to drive his dad's old car, he could have a new one. As Cyril sauntered up the steps, he stopped dead. Flossie appeared. Cyril immediately beamed.
Hello. You look pretty, Flossie. Off anywhere nice?
Flossie's face looked glum.
Not really. Just to Martin Ford's to buy a new dress. My dad sent me a postal order for £2. It's me birthday tomorrow. It'll be me 16th.
Oh, I didn't know. Are you doing anything nice?
Flossie looked behind her.
No. My mum's having me aunts around to a tea party. She's baking the cake now. But I don't even like cake.
Do you fancy coming out with me?
He gulped once he realised that he'd actually asked her out. He felt his cheeks go hot and his mouth felt as dry as a bone.
Yeah, why not? She replied,
her face now instantly lighting up with interest.
It's got to be better than staying around here. Where do you want to take me?
Cyril hadn't thought that far.
How about I keep it a surprise and I'll call for you at 7 o'clock?
Flossie was now really excited. She loved surprises, as long as it didn't involve sitting around drinking tea and eating cake with gossipy old women, putting the world to rights and giving her a lecture on men.
Oh, can you make it 8 o'clock? You see, my aunts and my mum's mates will all turn up at 3, and by 6 they'll be on the gin, and by 8 they won't even notice me gone.
8 it is, then. Flossie, have you got any mates?
She tilted her head to the side.
Yes, I've got a best friend, Trudy. Why?
Well, what about bringing her along? I could bring my mate, Frank, and you might feel less kind of awkward, if you know what I mean.
Yes, I've seen Frank. He's the big fella that lives along the way from you.
Cyril nodded.
Yeah, him.
My mate Trudy likes the look of him, you know.
Even better, then. Right, 8 o'clock by the bins would be best tomorrow night. It's a date.
See you then.
She winked as she skipped down the stairs past him. Normally, nothing ever fazed Cyril. He never felt nervous or uneasy, except when it came to women, and Flossie in particular. He now had even more reason to get that cocaine sold. He had a girl to wine and dine. Mr. Bates opened the door and flicked his head for Cyril to come inside.
All right, Mr. Bates?
Yeah, son. And how's your brother? I haven't seen him out and about.
Cyril's upbeat mood plummeted.
Nah, that kicking he got has knocked him for 6. He's a nervous wreck. He won't even go to school. Me mum says he doesn't have to go, and she even gave the bloke from the school board an ear bashing.
Taking a seat opposite Mr. Bates, Cyril leaned back and crossed his legs. His confident posture didn't go unnoticed.
You need to be careful, Cyril. That fight you had seems to have given you a name. The cocky little walk and the flash hairdo, they only draw attention.
Cyril sat up straight.
I don't know what you mean.
Mr. Bates lit up a cigarette and blew the smoke up in the air as he stared at Cyril.
Yeah, you do, Cyril. A pat on the back and all those compliments. Men telling you they respect you for seeing off the Deacon mob. It can go to your head. I know, mate, because it's human nature. If you get treated like a top dog, you act like one. But there's a difference. Act like you can take on anyone, and that's what will happen. The wannabes will always crawl out the woodwork and want to fight you. But you need to keep your nose clean, lad. Don't draw attention to yourself, right?
Every word that Mr. Bates said made sense. He nodded.
Yeah, all right. I'll keep low for a bit.
Oh, I've got a date, though, with Flossie Heaver upstairs.
Mr. Bates smiled.
As long as she ain't like her mother. Now that one's a real piece of work. She's had more men than I've had capstans.
Cyril laughed, but really he wasn't one for disrespecting a woman.
So what brings you here, Cyril?
Leaning forward, Cyril kept his voice low.
It's been a few weeks now, and I was hoping I could start selling that cocaine.
So I take it you've decided on the path you want to take then? Cyril nodded slowly.
I can't work in one of the factories, it's just not me. I saw the toffs in the hotel and the lord that owned the mansion, and I want to live like that. I want money. I want to buy me mother nice clothes, not nick them from a rich woman at the Dorchester or the Ritz. I want a lovely motor. If it means I risk going to prison, then so be it. But I ain't living a boring life stuck on this estate with bugger all to live for.
Mr. Bates laughed.
Well, it doesn't surprise me. Really, it's in your blood after all. Right then, this cocaine. Like I told you a long time ago, it's all about supply and demand.
Cyril was now comfortably seated to listen to the facts and absorb the information like a sponge.
To flog drugs, you need buyers. The rich and stupid are your customers for cocaine, but you don't want to be running around with packets selling bits here and there. You need a buyer who will buy a big amount. There's less risk of getting caught that way. Now, the one issue you will have is if the sale of your cocaine ever gets back to the person you stole it from. Then, Cyril, you will have a bigger threat than the old Bill knocking at your door.
So where do I start? I mean, I know I've got the drugs, but I don't have the contacts. I was hoping that we could go 50-50 if you put me in touch with a buyer.
Mr. Bates sucked in his bottom lip.
There's your first mistake.
Cyril frowned.
50-50 for just a name? That's well over the odds, lad. You're too quick to give your money away. Now, I do have contacts, and I'll get rid of the cocaine for you, but 50-50? No, lad. Let's just say you will owe me a favour.
Cyril rubbed his hands together.
Fine by me. Do you want to see the goods?
Me?
Mr. Bates almost gasped.
No! Don't bring it all here, for Christ's sake. Just show me a small sample. Leave it with me and give me a week.
Oh, and weigh it, will you? So we know how much you got there.
Cyril didn't hang about. He pushed himself out of the chair and headed off.
See you in five, Mr. Bates.
By the time he was back home, his mother had left for work and Howie was sitting in front of the TV set watching cartoons. He would have to try to coax his brother out for the day, but he needed to get the ball rolling to sell his powder. Once he had the money, he would treat Howie to something special, although he didn't know quite what just yet. Using a kitchen knife once more, he removed the panel of the wardrobe to reveal the suitcase. After opening the side zipper, he stared at the clear bag. Perhaps it weighed more than a bag of sugar. He hurried back to the kitchen and grabbed the scales and weights to weigh the cocaine. Sure enough, it was well over the weight of a bag of sugar. In fact, there were 2.5 pounds of gold dust. Using an old envelope, he poured a small helping inside, folded it up, and placed it into his top pocket. Once he'd put everything back inside the wardrobe and replaced the panel, he hurried up to Mr. Bates' flat. 3 long taps followed by 2 slow taps, and Mr. Bates opened the door. He looked up and down the walkway and stepped aside for Cyril to come in.
There you go, said Cyril, handing Mr. Bates the folded envelope. Oh, and there's 2.5 pounds of the stuff at my place.
The open-mouthed expression on Mr. Bates's face told Cyril that he was in possession of a lot of drugs.
Leave it with me.
Thanks, Mr. Bates. I know it probably don't sit well with you, but it's what I want to do. You do understand, don't you?
With a nod and a chuckle, Mr. Bates shut the door. Cyril was mentally counting the money in his head when he literally bumped into Shirley, who had her head down,